All right, testing. Y'all can't hear me. Okay, good afternoon. We're going to go ahead and get started. Let's do an introduction up here, and we'll start to my right this time, if Ms. Boyer don't mind.
Lori Boyer, Downtown Investment Authority.
Jacoby Pittman, Clara White Mission.
Regina Gaffney, District 7.
Mike Montoya, Historic Preservation Commissioner.
And thank everybody. Do we want to introduce everybody? Do we want to just keep it up here? There's lots of folks in here. What do you want to do?
Up to you.
Whoops. Up to you, Mr. Chairman. But I would like
in the House.
How much time you going to need for your presentation? I guess
probably going to take us 20 minutes.
Okay, so we got enough time to do an introduction around the table, please.
Hello, everyone. I'm Marsha Perry, and I'm with the board of Clara White Mission. Nadine Carswell, Jacksonville citizen.
Jack Carolla, Downtown Investment Authority.
Lori Radcliffe Myers, Downtown Investment Authority.
George Greenhill, Maceo Lawton and Ray Elks.
Larry Cleveland, Maceo Elks, Lawton and Ray.
Al Marshall, Maceo Lawton and Ray.
Mike Gibson, Maceo Lodge number 8.
Andre Kimbrell, Maceo Lodge number 8.
Antonio Posey, DIA.
Steve Kelly, DIA.
Alan Duvall, Build Up Downtown.
Noel Wynn, Public Works.
Meg Fisher, Clara White Mission. Karen Wright, Clara White Mission.
Adrian Swanigan, Jacksonville resident.
Urban Pedro Cohen, Lisk, Jacksonville.
Bishop Hall, represent the most forceful union grand lodge in the state of Florida.
And that's everybody. Yeah.
Two more people.
Okay.
Do we miss anybody? There we go.
I'm sorry. I got glasses on.
Maybe Davis is Dirk Stanton.
Mercedes Parker, assistant to the best council member in the room.
Trust me, I believe that too. That's my sister from another mother, so I don't argue about her. Let me thank everybody for coming. Councilwoman Pittman are going to talk about the purpose. But let me give you some good prayer news if you pray with me tonight. In talking to Congressman Lawson, it appeared that Build Back Better budget, they don't know how much money it's going to be, but I asked him to, I wanted to present to Jacksonville how much money going to be in the budget for historic buildings downtown. His staff is doing the research now, so Ms. Boyer, look like we may be getting a blessing in the next 2 to 3 months. And I've been told that Senator Manchin is on board, so it may pass this time. And saying that, it was perfect timing. Me and Councilwoman Pittman have been talking about this over the last month. We knew it was coming. So it may give lots of these historic buildings hope for the future. Make sure you stay in contact with your councilman as the dollars come from Washington to make sure you guys be able to use some of the resources that the city going to have to move your program forward. And saying that, I'm going to allow turn this over to Councilwoman Pittman to talk about the purpose. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilman Gaffney, and thank you for being the councilman for the La Villa neighborhood. I think most of you all know just a history of La Villa. It's the only area that survived the fire in 1901. And so with that in mind, there's several organizations who are owners currently in that district that are still running a business. And so with all of the good things that are happening in the La Villa strategies, we want to make sure that the organizations that are still providing services to the La Villa community, that we are part of the bigger picture of the strategies. And so with that in mind, you know, there's a lot of good development that's going on. Some of us have been privy to the goals and objectives of La Villa, but we want to make sure that it's an engagement of the historical organizations such as the Elks Lodge, Stanton, the Clara White Mission, the Urban League, and we are and have been part of the preservation and the fabric. And so we want to make sure as we listen today to the presentation that we hopefully can also create a preservation district with those organizations in it and how we could get funding. We also had an opportunity to talk to LISC, who's in the room as well, and hopefully to find out about the different type of resources that the organizations who need them, you know, desperately, Councilman. And we know that you have been a champion, and we want you to kind of hear what we're interested in doing and how we preserve our buildings in that area and make it, you know, a destination like Atlanta and St. Petersburg. Because a lot of times when you talk about development, we want to make sure that the African-American history is preserved, because Ashley Street, again, is like Bourbon Street in New Orleans. And so with that said, today we're here to listen. We invited Ms. Boyer from the DIA to give us an update. We were involved in the early studies of community engagement when this started a few years ago. And so, you know, there's a lot of things that have happened since then, Ms. Boyer, and I'm sure you're here to tell us the updates, and we want the different organizations to know what it is and how we can be a part of the bigger plan. Okay? Thank you.
Thanks so much. I appreciate the opportunity to share with you today, but interestingly, so this is the first downtown neighborhood that we are speaking to and that we've been able to really wrap together the studies and plans that have been done, and then what our new current update that has not yet been introduced to City Council but has passed our board. So it will be coming in the next month or two. So what you're going to see is the combination of both of those and how they roll together, which I think will be really helpful, and it actually was very helpful for us because we saw some areas of conflict that needed to be resolved and gives us an opportunity to do that. We're going to start with this document. So this document, many of you were involved in. This is the La Villa Neighborhood Strategy, and it was adopted back in 2019. There were a lot of public outreach meetings, community engagement meetings back in 2018, 2019 when that was developed. And it's the foundation for things to happen in the La Villa community. What I will say is, hearing some of the comments already about the historic buildings, what we don't do here or any in other neighborhood downtown is we don't get prescriptive about what a private property owner, whether you're a nonprofit private property owner or you are a private property owner, what you can do with your own property. We are not telling you whether you can sell it or not. We are not telling you how it must be used, that it must be used for this purpose and not for that purpose. So what you're going to see in the plan is it is broader than that and looks at it as a higher level of how all of it fits together. I just see Cantrice walked in. Some of you know her, and she was very involved in the 2018-2019 La Villa strategy development. Many of you probably were in meetings with her as that was developed. So if we can run through the PowerPoint. Ina, you're going to drive for us. So back in the original La Villa strategy, as now updated, four focus points.
prioritizing history, culture, and community-connected spaces. That's number one, which I think is very consistent with what I just heard the council member say. Number two, focus on redevelopment activities on housing and transit-oriented development, including mixed use. So that was from our perspective, that the types of uses we were most focused on, as opposed to office or as opposed to industrial, were on residential and transit-oriented mixed use. That's a more dense retail-residential combination. Number three is mobility, which means everything from traffic calming on streets, road diets, expanded sidewalks, and we'll talk more about those. But it's all how people get around. And number four is building special places. And that was the gateways that are identified in the LaVilla plan. We'll talk more about those. New neighborhood parks to serve residents and businesses in the area. And the neighborhood identity and design standards, which are coming out of our new update and information. So you're going to get to see all of that. Next. So A, first one, celebration of history and culture. This included Lift Every Voice and Sing Park, which, as you all know, size got doubled from the time it was originally proposed in this study to what it is now. It has already been designed. The design is almost complete. The construction funds have been raised. We expect it to be under construction next year. It's well on its way. The second piece of that celebrating history was the Arts Gateway at Davis and Union Street. That's what the LaVilla Neighborhood Strategy recommended. The Hood design, Walter Hood, was engaged by the Parks Department to design Lift Every Voice and Sing Park, and he looked further at some other areas. He recommended that the gateway be more the Ritz Pocket Park across from the Ritz Museum at Davis and State. And that top picture you see is the sculpture that is envisioned to go there. I understand that's also funded. So you should expect to see that improvement coming as well. LaVilla Heritage Trail, we're going to talk more about that. That is a piece of the history-culture element. So are the shotgun houses, which are city-owned, the two shotgun houses that will remain. There are actually three. One of them is being moved by Parks to become part of Lift Every Voice and Sing Park.
And that, are those the houses that survived the fire from 1901 on Union Street? They were moved there.
They're moved there, and they're now, is it Jefferson?
Yes, on the corner
they're
of Jefferson.
They're on the corner of Jefferson. Mm-hmm. So we, DIA, out of our funds, allocated $250,000. I think Mr. Brohl is telling me it's going to cost $325,000 to restore those this year from an exterior standpoint. We're not doing an interior finish because there's no predetermined use, but what we want to make sure is that the roof is secure, the siding is done, everything on the outside is done so that they're stable, they look good, they're not a blight in the neighborhood, and they're available for the next thing. So that's coming this year. And then Hood also recommended a feature that he called the colored waiting room at the Prime Osborne Convention Center, but on the train station side on Lee Street. And I understand that element is also moving forward and that the Parks Department is moving forward with that. So when we talk a little bit more about gateways, you're going to see how these fit into that. Pictures of Lift Every Voice and Sing Park, if you are not familiar with the design, probably all of you know all about that and have seen it before. But I will point out in the upper picture, the treatment of the lights over the street and the banner name, if you will. I know that they are moving forward with that. I think the color of the pavement stripes needs to change because traffic engineering wouldn't allow the green. But that is really going to be a symbolic street treatment in various places in LaVilla. So you might see it on Ashley, too. Mm-hmm. So we're going to make that a consistent themed area that whenever you have a feature, you're going to have the pavement and the lights that go across the top. This is the LaVilla Heritage Trail location as determined in the LaVilla strategy document. So it comes, if you're starting at the bottom, that is Park Street coming across the viaduct, going down Lee Street. This is going to be the same route as the Emerald Trail to right there where you make the turn. And then it turns and follows Davis Street over and eventually connects up to FSCJ. This is going to be important as we talk about which pieces are which.
The La Villa Heritage Trail is not primarily a transportation trail, but a heritage trail. It's about historic markers. It's about connecting historic places. It's about a place people would walk and learn and find out about culture and history in the area. That's not to say it wouldn't have an expanded sidewalk, but it is less. So to distinguish it from the Emerald Trail that we'll talk more about, the Emerald Trail is a bicycle pedestrian connected network where you would expect people could ride a longer distance and connect. This may not have that same kind of bicycle connectivity, but it will have all of the cultural attributes along it because it's all about the culture and history. Next one. This points out some of those cultural points of interest that were identified. That is why the trail is located where it is from a heritage trail standpoint. Next, though, the focus on housing and mixed-use development. The concept in La Villa was to fill the missing middle, which was envisioned to be workforce housing, senior housing to meet the growing needs of urban core, but fee simple townhome products. So you see that breaking ground in April for the Johnson Commons townhomes. It was not intended that it would be entirely affordable housing. There would be affordable housing in La Villa, but the goal here is that there is a mix of diverse housing types so that it ranges from full market rate to fully affordable. And that missing middle was considered the workforce units, which are somewhere in the 80 to 120% AMI. Steve Kelly is my expert on all this who can share that with you. But the idea there was that there are a lot of people who work downtown who need a place to live that La Villa particularly serves, as well as Brooklyn and other places. Aligning the incentives with market conditions and market conditions in La Villa, this is part of the new plan, the new update that will be coming to City Council. And I'm going to share more about what that means specifically, but it's an incentive in La Villa for residential housing gets a bump, gets an increase over what that incentive would be if you were in Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. You get more if you're in La Villa. And then facilitating the restoration and rehabilitation of the historic building stock. So this is what I know a bunch of you are interested in. But as it was conceived in the plan, it was renovating those for multifamily housing, attached dwelling units, or office use. That doesn't mean it can't be renovated for other purposes, simply that the plan's focus was how do we take these historic buildings and adapt them to a commercially viable use going forward. And one, before you switch, Ina, I really love the statement down at the bottom where it says, in La Villa, neighborhood-serving retail spaces should be included on the ground floor of all new residential buildings and where feasible, all new non-residential buildings, and where feasible in new residential buildings. So one of the things you're going to see throughout is this concept that having retail, having entertainment venues, having those kinds of things are really important to the character of La Villa. And so we want to encourage that they're part of redevelopment, that it doesn't just become kind of sterile street fronts that don't have that interaction. Next. So the incentive portion that I was mentioning, so the REV grants, which are rebates of real estate taxes that you get for developing residential units, in La Villa, there is a bonus of between 5 and 20%. Over what you would get in other parts of downtown. There's a lot of details in this program. We can give those to whoever's interested, but I just wanted you to be aware of that. And in addition, if you are on the Emerald Trail or you are on a park front, so now if you're going to build something that faces the Arts Gateway Park or that faces Lift Every Voice and Sing Park, there is an expectation that 30% of the ground floor of your building has to be activated adjacent to the park. The next is a new incentive that we're going to have in the program we're going to be presenting to council, which is for small-scale projects. These are projects of 4 to 16 units. And the idea there is $15,000 to $18,000 per unit of a completion grant. There are many of the older buildings that are just small, and
they don't have room to put 50 units in them. So the idea was we didn't want to preclude those. If you could renovate upper floors and you might be able to fit 12 units in a building, then they would qualify for this, even though a REV grant might not really yield enough money to be helpful. There are affordable housing loans not to exceed $700,000. So those are the match loans that we do on affordable housing projects. And then there is the Downtown Preservation and Revitalization Program, as well as the Historic Preservation Trust Fund. I have Steve Kelly here, who can talk to you more specifically about that and answer questions. That's a program we've had now for several years that helps facilitate the costs of renovation of historic buildings. I'll tell you a feature of it that may be a challenge for some of you, which is it does not apply to tax-exempt property. So the program as written excludes tax-exempt property because the concept is that you provide this money to put a vacant or underutilized property back in service, and now that it's back in service, eventually it's going to start generating tax revenue and pay the city back for its investment in that building.
Can you talk a little bit more about that? Because I know Clara White Mission did one of our sites like that, but there's some organizations may not know what that means. Can you give them just a little bit if they decide they want to repurpose their buildings and how that would work?
So I may let Steve do some of that. What I can tell you is, so let's go both to the, there's two pieces. There's Historic Preservation Trust Fund. That one is up to $100,000. And if what you qualify for or what you're seeking is up to $100,000, then under that program, you do not have the same restriction on the tax-exempt status. That was not in the old Historic Preservation Trust Fund. If you're seeking in excess of $100,000 and you're under the Downtown Preservation and Revitalization Program, then if you currently own a building and you're a tax-exempt organization, the only way you would qualify is if you partnered with someone or you sold the building to a taxable entity and then ground leased it, you know, leased it back. Somehow you have to structure the transaction such that the property is taxable. There are a lot of ways you can do that. But Steve, do you want to add anything on the program itself?
Steve Kelly, Downtown Investment Authority. It's good to see everybody. Thank you for the focus on this important area today. So I think CEO Boyer has captured it very well. It's a rather complex program that's built around whether it's exterior renovations, interior renovations, code compliance renovations. And so there's different ways to utilize the program. We recognize that in many of these older buildings, code compliance alone is often the majority of the expense that's required, so we have different parameters around those projects that only need code compliance renovations made to them. But as CEO Boyer noted, that the tax portion of it, because of the costs associated with the rehabilitation of these buildings is so great, we were able to structure this program in such a way that where in the public investment policy we target a tax return or return on investment of one time. In this program, it's limited to 0.5, knowing that there's a property tax abatement that's allowed for the first 10 years when these properties are put on or undergo a restoration for the first time. So that's also relevant to this conversation, that when we're modeling this out, we're looking at the return on investment that includes that tax abatement for the first 10 years, and then we calculate it only to achieve a threshold of 0.5.
Steve, before you go, I think Ms. Borg got something to ask you. So I understand the structure, and this is may be something DIE may need to think about, because I'm concerned about a lot of these businesses may be not-for-profit downtown that may not fit. And I heard you say they probably had to join with a for-profit. That means I'm giving part of my business up just to be able to meet some of the circumstances that the city's asked me to do. So how can, and this may be something you may need to think, my ask for you is how can we tweak the ordinance deposit to, so it can help these small businesses, not for profit down here.
Thank you. So there's several dimensions to your question. When you're talking about helping a small business, in terms of an operating business, there are other programs which are do not exclude nonprofits. The preservation program relates strictly to who owns the building. Doesn't relate to who operates the business. So it could be a nonprofit operating the business, but it's talking about who owns the building and whether the building itself is taxable or not. From one of the things, so first of all, that particular program only applies to buildings that are locally designated landmarks. So you have to go through that process, which is something you go through with the planning department and then goes to city council. I think many of these buildings are already designated landmarks. In addition, there is a part of the program that he referenced that's code compliance, which is funding you can get even if you're not a landmark. And that funding is eligible to bring a building, like put sprinklers in, for example. Do things that you have to do to bring it up to be usable today because you're not allowed, the fire marshal won't let you have people in it until you make those improvements. Those are different than the restoration of the exterior or the renovation of the interior consistent with historic guidelines, which are increasing the value of the property. The first one's just to be able to put it into use. So there are different guidelines for different pieces of it. We do have programs that apply to businesses for operating different things that would apply even if you're a nonprofit. The answer to your question is you could obviously change the ordinance. You could change the ordinance guidelines of the program, maybe just in La Villa. I mean, there are different things that you could do, but I will say that the program is a expensive program. And it has done a good job of jump-starting some of these. I think there are structures, in fact, I don't know, a year and a half ago, long time ago, Bishop Hall sent me an article from somebody that in Atlanta that had done a redevelopment, and they did exactly what I was talking about, where they partnered with somebody, and then the building was taxable, but the entity that had been originally involved was still involved. But it managed to fit within the program by virtue of doing that. What we're really looking for is putting the buildings back into a productive use, too, because many of them are either partially or entirely vacant. And the idea is not to just fix the building, but then to have some productive use of it. So whether it's meeting space, whether it's residential units, whether it's office space, whatever it might be, you want to have a business plan and a program as to how you're going to then be able to lease the space in the future, make money on it, keep up the building. But that's really the goal here, is that it's not just a one-and-done, get it repaired, but then be able to sustain it and keep it functioning.
So, question, do we know how many historic properties that we may be talking about right now, if it's five, if it's 10, that y'all have identified on your master's plan list that may fit a criteria of, because I don't know how many, and I guess that's a question that if y'all know, we probably need to research.
So there is a page in the bid and CRA update. Mr. Perola will remember we had the historic preservation section update for us to tell us how many landmarks there are in downtown and where they're located. I don't have that page with me.
That's fine.
But we do know all of the designated landmarks within downtown. That does not mean that there aren't additional properties that might qualify for landmark status that have not yet been designated. Those also might qualify.
And I think, you know, what we're interested in is in La Villa.
Sure.
So I would say, again, yes, the organizations that are here, or maybe we look at a certain area in terms of a district.
We can pull that. We can pull that information for you of how many there are right now that are landmarked. Mm-hmm. And then I don't know if historic preservation section probably keeps track of buildings that are eligible for designation, even though they have not been. I mean, they won't have the whole write-up on them, but they'll have some of that.
Right.
So we'd have that information.
The two of the organizations are local and national. And so, again, since we're in close proximity, it just makes sense to maybe have some type of preservation district. But I didn't know how that also impacts with the overlay as well, or how does that
So work? There is a, when you're talking about a district, mm-hmm. there is a National Historic District in downtown. Mm-hmm. However, that is more in the central core. It does not include some of the buildings, I think, in the National Historic District, and maybe we can pull up the boundaries of that. Guy, do you have your computer? If you can pull it up and send it to Ina, she could put it on the screen, maybe. Maybe we can make that happen. But there is a National Historic District boundary within downtown. We can also provide that to you. It would be possible to create a La Villa Historic District. But I will tell you that when you do that, there are several things that happen in a historic district. First, they're looking at the number and density of buildings within a certain area. There are some areas that are probably going to qualify, but through no fault of La Villa's, there are areas where there are vast spaces of parking lots that the buildings have been lost. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know how that would impact your district designation, but you certainly can designate any of the individual buildings. And I don't know that the district itself particularly helps you.
We just want to know what our options are. So
yep.
I want you to finish your...
All right, let's go through the rest of the overall plan. So these are some incentives that apply in La Villa in particular, but there's also your regular commercial office incentives and other things. Next slide, Ina. So remember we talked about the first thing was about history-culture connections, the second thing was about housing, the third thing is about mobility in the original strategy. So a couple things that are happening right now that are part of the original strategy is FDOT is proposing a road diet on Beaver Street. And that road diet, the city is suggesting adding a multi-use path on the south side to connect the Hogan Street Emerald Trail to the Model Mile. My suggestion would be that that connection happen along Davis Street, which is the Heritage Trail location. So if you are going to make a multi-use path that connects you back to the Model Mile of the Emerald Trail, you could do it in the location of the Heritage Trail, and then you've kind of multi-purpose that. There is a two-way conversion of Monroe currently being discussed as it relates to the area from the interstate down to Jefferson and Broad, down to the courthouse. And the theory there is there's a high crash rate on that street, and it was once recommended for two-way. So two-waying slows it down, makes streets more pedestrian-friendly and more viable for retail. So that is under consideration. Again, that was recommended by the original strategy. And the third thing that is in a phase of implementation is the Lee Street Road Diet and the Park Street Bridge, both of which are part of the Model Mile of the Emerald Trail that is actually under construction now. It's just under construction under I-95 over by Florida Dwight Park. But it has already begun. So these are all original strategy recommendations that are in various stages of implementation. Then next. So this comes from our master plan document. And it's a little hard to see, which is why I gave you the other blown up versions on particular streets. But it's an opportunity for you to see the Emerald Trail coming up. So you see McCoy's Creek. That's fairly obvious where that is in the slide. The Park Street Viaduct Bridge. So the Emerald Trail is the green dotted line that's coming across the viaduct and heading up to the retention pond that's a DOT retention pond and then follows along and heads over to the S line. So it makes a western turn there and goes under the interstate. At that same location where that retention pond is, if you look at the red line, the red dotted line, that's the Heritage Trail. So that's where I was saying that the two split. So they're together for part of it and then they split. The Heritage Trail intending to pick up specific cultural sites, and the Emerald Trail connecting you to neighborhoods that are further west and further north. Next. Emerald Trail Model Mile, this is just the isolated version of where it actually goes and where it connects you to. And that one is, and the next one is the Hogan Street Cycle Track that I mentioned that connects Hogan Street all the way. It's not in La Villa, but I wanted to show it because you can see Model Mile over on the left and Hogan Street here. And then think about that heritage trail that comes across Davis, connects up to Beaver Street, and if we do the multi-use path on Beaver Street, on the south side of Beaver Street will connect you over to the Hogan Street cycle track, which makes this all integrated and have all of them work together, which would let the Heritage Trail connect you between both segments of the Emerald Trail. Building special places, I wanted to talk about. That was the fourth recommendation of the strategy. The gateway features were envisioned at State and Union and Davis. So we've already got Ritz Parka Park under design at now State Street and Davis. We still need to look at the Union and Davis, and we have the Arts Gateway concept was envisioned there. I have another slide on it. Park and Lee Street is another gateway. There's going to be a slide that shows you where these three gateways are. So think about entrances into La Villa. So one from State and Union at Davis, one from the Park Street Viaduct as you come into La Villa, and then the third one was Jefferson and Broad at Acosta. That one has not yet been designed. I have not seen anything on that one, but the other two are well underway. The second element of this was destination parks and neighborhood parks. We all know about Lift Every Voice and Sing Park, but as part of our new updated study that we're just finishing, there was also an analysis of the existing parks to serve residents and businesses in the area. Deficiencies were noted, and there's a recommendation that there's a new neighborhood playground and a park built in La Villa, and we'll show you where we're thinking of. But that's in the works and in our DIA's five-year plan. And then finally, the neighborhood identity and design standards, which we're going to share. So here, a little hard to see, you see the three green arches. Those are the three gateways that show you the this is back from that 2019 plan and shows you the locations of those. Next slide. This is from the recent park study that shows the area in which we are deficient in a neighborhood park with a playground, sport courts, and a multi-use field, flexible playing field. So we are looking at finding a location in this area, either on city-owned property, maybe school board property. I have a particular one I have my eye on that I think would work well. But the idea is for us to identify a location and fund design and creation of a neighborhood park in this area, within that circle. Next. So this is from the master plan, identifying current civic use locations and park spaces. So you can see near the Ritz Theater, the pocket park shown. Then right beyond it is the Arts Gateway area, which is city-owned property that we were contemplating would be a park space. In this was identified in the La Villa strategy as a park space as part of that gateway. And then you see the green box that is actually looks to me like it is misplaced now as we move things around. That area on the other side of Beaver Street, which is part of the school property, is really where I think the ideal playground sport court location would be. It's unused school property. I mean, they may have something they plan to do with it in the future, and I haven't approached them about it. But it is a parcel that, because of its proximity to the school, I think it would be a particularly good place for that playground, and it's pretty centrally located. The neighborhood branding and identity. So looking at what we already have, these are all familiar scenes to you within the district, and the idea is that was the inspiration for the color palette that was adopted and the design elements that were adopted and recommended. So drawing from that natural character in the district. That was the recommended color palette. You'll see it carry through in various design standards. Next one. So the La Villa logo and the persona, again, these are things that you have seen before and have read before that were part of the original strategy and have just been updated with that logo in this colorway. But it's contemplating traditional. So when we're talking whether we are helping to fund public art installations, whether we're talking about new street furniture, that we'd be following this concept that it has that color palette, it has a traditional 18th, 19th century design inspiration, it is rich in color and texture, bringing a sense of history and glamour to the district. Next. Too long to read. We'll hand that one out. It's a good story, though, that's included in the document that spends a lot of time talking about the importance of the history. And then these are just some examples of the logo being incorporated in various concepts, street banners that we would envision we would be implementing in the next year. Next. And then some of the design elements. So one of the things that the updated plan contemplates is that within each neighborhood in downtown, they have their own distinct color palette. They have their own signature trees. So everybody wants oak trees. Everybody gets oak trees. But within that, you pick some trees that flower and have the colors that are consistent with the color palette. Use pavers that are consistent with the color palette so that when you walk into a neighborhood, you know you're in a distinct place. This is a special place. It has its own street furnishings. It looks different than when you're in city center or when you're in Cathedral District. They don't all look the same. So this is the palette for that. And then going back to the master plan graphic, what I wanted to share here is this is our concept of sites that over the next 5 to 10 years are likely to be redeveloped. These are not your privately owned historic buildings. You're not seeing those identified on here. What you're seeing identified are areas that are either city-owned or government-owned property that is not currently developed or things that we think are seriously underutilized, surface parking lots, for example, that provide opportunities for redevelopment. And then finally, I think my last slide is there are two identified catalytic sites in La Villa. One is the current convention center site. In our plan, the concept is that it would become both a re-energized train station, that it would actually have train service again, whether that is commuter rail and Amtrak. But the idea is that the historic part of the train station would be restored to a train station. The remainder of the convention center site, at some point in the future, we are envisioning here as an innovation campus. And that was part of this La Villa strategy that you saw back in 2019, and it remains part of the plan. The other is the Arts Gateway site. So this is the site on State and Union near Davis, where there is a number of blocks of city-owned property. They are envisioned to be mixed-income multifamily with commercial retail street frontage, both on Union and on the park side. There's a pavilion shown on the school parcel, which would be like a performance pavilion for the middle school arts performances, and it frames Duval Street as that entrance gateway. So those, when we identify something as a catalyst site, that enables it to receive enhanced incentives and makes it a priority in terms of our focus over the next 5 years. So those are the two larger assemblages that we are looking at as priority sites. And I think that's the last slide in the presentation. So that kind of gives you a roll-up of all of the different aspects of the updated plan. So there are parks here, there are roads here, but a lot of it is a focus on how we emphasize and bring to the fore the history and culture of La Villa, whether it's in signage, street design, or the heritage trail, the various sculptures that are being added, et cetera. So I'm happy to answer questions.
So, yeah, if anybody got any questions, please raise your hand, and we'll try to do our best to answer as many as we can.
Don't they have to fill out those blue cards?
I don't know if they pass any out.
Okay.
So what you can do is take that microphone, take it to him. Thank you. And while she's taking it to him, help me understand this innovative concept at the convention center. I heard you say that, and that's the first time I heard that terminology, because I always thought one day we'll do something different with it. So can you explain that to me?
So this comes from the
master plan,
2019 plan, and the concept was that the area where the current new construction is, the large surface parking lot and that building, could in the future be redeveloped in a campus-style environment. And whether that is a campus affiliated with medical innovation, or whether that is a campus affiliated with fintech, because there have been talks about a fintech campus opportunity here. There have also been, I've also heard the possibility of, you know, Dr. Haley was working on doing the medical innovation campus. So there are many different ones, but we're looking at it as a large enough parcel that someone could actually have a campus-type development with multiple parcels. It would provide jobs. It's right next to the transportation center and the transportation hub. It becomes very easy for people throughout the city to get to.
Okay.
And so that was really the concept of the vision for future redevelopment of that site at some point down the road.
Okay, thank you. This, I think we got some questions. Go ahead, sir.
What is the criteria to apply for funding for this program, the Elks Lodge? We're in a historical district, and we're a historical building. We're on the national and the state historical building.
So I'll let Steve answer more of the details of what the criteria are. I think he brought with him the program guidelines because we anticipated this. So you've kind of met Steve Kelly. Steve is one of the two people. We now have two people in our office. Antonio, raise your hand. Antonio is the other one who will be working with businesses and clients that are coming in and, you know, looking to apply for various programs and incentives. And Antonio is going to be working with us primarily with facade grants and retail enhancement and trying to reach smaller businesses that we haven't had the time to connect with. Steve is going to, I'm sure, will still stay very involved in this historic preservation program because he has been since its inception. So I'm going to let him share the details on that.
Thank you. Again, Steve Kelly, DIA. So first I would direct you to our website, and you might want to jot this down. It's dia.coj.net. And on that website, you'll see a link that says Doing Business With Us. Under that is Doing Business With the DIA. And that's where you'll find all of our the programs that we use in our development efforts. This one, again, is called the Downtown Preservation and Revitalization Program, or DPRP. You can understand why we use the acronym. And so the guidelines, such as what I have right here, and I have a copy I'd be happy to leave with you, are found there. It's kind of extensive, so I'm not going to go through each of the details now. But effectively, it just involves a business plan, the construction costs that we look at on a line item basis, a number of different things that we go through effectively underwriting the program, because there's really four different limiters in terms of our ability or to what drives the maximum funding amount. I'd be happy to spend a little bit more time with you one-on-one, but they are listed very specifically, a step-by-step process within the program guidelines found at that website.
And I think Ina's showing you on the screen how to get there, has been walking through it. So if you've been watching her, she's showing you where you find it on the website.
Okay. Next question. We're going to go back and forth here.
On page 13, number 2, that says courthouse National Law for Small Professional Offices. The employer is where the service on street parking is offloaded. And if you look at page 22, you see exactly what that's referring to, the parking on Duval Street, where the courthouse bailiffs usually park at. And the lot next to our building is always utilized by the bailiffs there, as well as all the on-street parking there. We have no access to daily parking to show people our building, to get people to come in to work with us. I've called the downtown parking people about it. I asked them if they could possibly put up a sign just in front of our building so that we would have some utilization of parking. I've gotten several tickets down there just while I'm there working in the building, and we just don't have any adequate parking on the street at all. Are there any plans for Duval Street as far as traffic flow is concerned?
No, but we can certainly look into that for you. So help me understand. Are there meters on the street, and you're saying the bailiffs are parking at the meters, but no?
No, if you look at page 22.
Oh, 22. I was on 22.
On the right-hand side. It's just lane there.
On the right side.
Okay.
Down here. Okay.
And so you're saying they arrive and take up the whole street because there's on-street parking, but there is not any time limit or anything else on the parking there.
Right, that's correct. And if we just had some space that we could do our business there, we wouldn't mind at all. But,
well, I'm happy to look into it. You may not like my solution. So what we run the Office of Public Parking, too, and I will tell you that the solution to get turnover in parking spaces and to keep employees from parking all day in front of somebody's business is to put a parking meter there. And if the parking meter is there and it has a two-hour time limit or something, then those employees will find another place to park, and you'll find that space turnover. I mean, there are any number of businesses downtown where that, I mean, it really works. But what we won't do is sign a particular space for a particular business, like parking for this business only, not on the public street. But we certainly can limit it to two-hour parking or something like that that will make it undesirable for people to use it as their private parking lot.
So let me try to help him. So I understand what he's saying, and I understand you and I had this conversation before. What can we do? Because that's just one business that I've been told to have problems parking in front of their businesses and trying to do business downtown. And I'm not sure if it's going to be fair if we put a parking meter and then they got to park to go inside to make a living. So I don't know if you have an answer today, but I would love to see DIA take a look at it and see how we can really come back with something that make sense for businesses if it's somehow give them one or two parking spaces in the future.
So, again, I'm not saying it's not possible, but it's not likely within the public right-of-way that you are going to designate a space for a private business. However, if there are parking lots available, that's a different story. And we certainly could sign and make changes in the way those spaces are used, because it sounds to me like they are, as you are trying to rebuild it as a business district, they are not being, this whole area, to your point about that comment about parking being offloaded here, I mean, it was almost seen as, well, there's a lot of dirt lots. We can just park there, and we don't have to worry about it. And so people have been avoiding having to either park at a meter or park in a parking garage or park in one of the paid lots that might be closer to the courthouse. I have no problem at all seeing that this neighborhood is treated as other neighborhoods are in downtown, where that's not an option. You know,
there are some businesses downtown, I believe, that is designated in front of that building as loading zones.
Yes, you can have a loading zone. That's true. There is a space for a loading zone. Depending on how much loading and unloading goes on in the business, there's usually only one per block. But, you know, loading zones are a possibility.
Let me, so we can answer some other questions. So, right quick, So see where the white car at? That's the city land. That's not on the streets. That's right by the lounge. And so can the city, can we draft an ordinance, or can DIA, since it's a city's own right by the business, it's not in the streets, what can we do to allow them to use it during the Pacific time?
Well, there are certain restrictions from a design standard standpoint of creating a surface parking lot, but if we designed something there that complied with those design standards, you could create some off-street parking spaces. The question is whether that is really the highest and best use of that land. If you do that, now you're preventing that from being redeveloped for a retail building, an office building, or whatever else, if that's really where... But, I mean, we can certainly take a look at it.
That land is really not that big. I think maybe, 8 to 10 parking spots are there.
Well, the way they use it now, they get about 20 cars in there because they park.
But they're tight. I mean, it's not safe.
And you have to come up on the sidewalk to get in there. You know, there's not an entrance or a place to get out. So, and if you plan on putting some kind of building there, I don't know what it would be. It would be awfully tall because there's not enough space to really put anything. So. That's, we've been looking at that for a long time. Like I said, that part of the land that's next to our building, that is owned by the city, we understand, and then the other part on the other side of the two houses is owned by the city, we understand, as well. No. And we didn't know if there were plans, in the future for that property. That's what we were asking about.
And I think at this point... Gloria, we're just trying to see what's available, because from a historical and a business aspect, their site, they renovated their site where it's a special event. I don't know if you've ever been inside, but it's a beautiful historical site, and I know you've been in the Masonic Temple in Stanton, and also the Clara White Mission, which is originally the Globe Theater. So I think from a destination aspect of preserving the history, all of us are just in maybe a 2 or 3 block area. And for them to be able to have special events there, and that's why they wanted the council member here to see if there was a opportunity to either lease that land maybe, a year, $1 a year or something like that, and they would be responsible for maintaining that lot. I know we have done some things like that before in the district. So, at this point, we want to see what the opportunities are for us to remain and be viable in the community. And with that said, I know there are different types of grants, like the facade grant, and you mentioned earlier about the historical preservation. And I think what we'd like to do from this meeting is maybe follow up again, and you meet with the 3 or 4 organizations to make sure they understand what the opportunities are here. And, we want to be a part. We know that growth is inevitable and it will come, but we want to be a part of the growth that's happening in La Villa and a part of Brooklyn. All of that really goes together. And as you talk about the Heritage Trail, which is on the west side of all of us, and it's not inclusive of us. And so, to make sure that the organizations that are, there in La Villa, like the Broad Street area, Patrica Mendez wasn't able to come here, but she has a historical home there as well. And so at this point, we want to make sure that we can continue to remain in the area without, you mentioned earlier about the code enforcements. A lot of us have been grandfathered in, I think, over the years. But as you know, once you start development, that grandfather goes away. So I think today hearing what the strategies include, I think it's a great opportunity for downtown economic development. It's not just on the riverfront right now. Mm-hmm. It is an inclusive of what Jacksonville used to be like before consolidation. And so I think, you know, for all of us, it's a win-win in terms of developing, you know, the strategies, the gateway, the affordable housing and mixed use of La Villa. And I wanted you to talk a little bit more, too, about the mobility. What type of funding is available for that?
For mobility plan?
Yes, the mobility.
And she would know. I assume Councilwoman Pittman is talking about the mobility funds that we have when you do development, and that should capture some of that area.
So with respect to mobility, there are multiple things that we could talk about. As far as many of the projects that we're talking about, they're part of the city capital improvement program. So the Emerald Trail segment that was being built here is part of the city capital improvement program. The Beaver Street project that I mentioned to you would be something that the Florida Department of Transportation would do with their funds. I think the Monroe Street project that was envisioned would be something that would be come back and be a city capital improvement program project. But when you talk specifically to mobility funds, there's a program in the city where developers have to contribute a certain amount to a mobility, pay a mobility fee that builds up a mobility fund that can be used in certain geographic areas. There's a prioritized list of projects for what those are, but downtown is largely exempt from the mobility fee. So in this area, there are not specific funds on, you haven't accumulated the kind of funds that you have in some other more suburban areas to use for improvements here. We, from the tax increment district, are also appropriating our dollars to various mobility projects. So our first big project is the conversion of Forsyth and Adams back to two-way, because we think that really helps improve retail opportunities, business opportunities, et cetera, on Forsyth and Adams. That will connect down to Jefferson and Broad, but at this point it doesn't go beyond Jefferson and Broad. There's nothing more than we would love to have Forsyth included in that, and we really see Forsyth as part of that, but that's an issue with the Department of Transportation because it's also a major exit off the interstate. And they want to make sure traffic flows off the interstate, and JTA with their Regional Transportation Center has a bus lane that comes off there, so you know everybody has to play nice together. And our desire to have two-way had to defer to the other entities on that particular part of Forsyth. But most of these are going to be either city capital improvement program projects or DOT. And to your very first comment about the infrastructure funding being available, because this is the historic area that it is with the cultural heritage, I think there are many opportunities in the infrastructure bill to seek funding for the various road improvement projects and mobility projects that we would like to see happen in this area. So that could be things like whether we do what's called a road diet, where you narrow the travel lanes down, and that might provide you room for on-street parking where you don't currently have on-street parking. So there's opportunities like that that could help people with that. Or it gets you a widened sidewalk so you have room for sidewalk cafe space or outdoor seating space. So those are some of the things that we can look at and try to see if we can capitalize on in the area.
I just wanted to just piggyback on that, especially on Beaver Street. We have, the traffic has been so bad. We need to slow the traffic down in one of the buildings that we own. We just had another accident this morning, but because of Public Works, they were able to put the ballots up and it didn't damage the building this time. But again, if we're looking at slowing down the traffic on Beaver Street as well as Broad Street, that will actually help, especially with the parking that we talked about in both areas, because even with the Masonic Temple, they have to park in the back. And I remember years ago, they used to have meters on the streets, but they took those off and widened the streets. So we're just looking, at ways to be more efficient in those areas that you all are working like on the north side, I mean, what is that, the west side of La Villa and kind of include the urban core of La Villa.
Let me kind of close with a couple of things. One, I want to go back to that parking situation because I don't know if I or you or somebody need to draft or ordinance. If that's a historic site and there's nowhere to park during the daytime, we got a problem. And so my ask for you, and you tell me how to solve it, either we, us two, may draft an ordinance to allow the city to do a dollar on 6 months. We don't want to give it to them, but I'm just trying to solve their problem. And so if you can be thinking about giving us some guidance on how we can solve their problem, we'll appreciate that. And the good news for everybody here, we said earlier that I've been told, we've been told by Congressman Lawson just this morning, it looks as though that bill might be better. Project or Dallas and Washington finna pass. We've been told that they got the votes from the Senate side. We don't know how much money that means for the city of Jacksonville or the state of Florida, but we know it's millions. And my prayer, Ms. Boyer, as the dollars trickle down to North Florida and Jacksonville, as we now begin to take a dive and look at trying to help these small businesses in the La Villa area, especially the corridor that we focus on, that we make sure we utilize those dollars to help them grow. I've been working with a couple, not calling names, and trying to come up with dollars. But I think it's critical. I mean, we can do all the infrastructure and all those improvements that we need to, and I think the city got the dollars to do that. But we're going to have the dollars to approve these structures and these historic buildings, and we still fail. So I think as we move forward the next 2 months to 3 months, I think we'll meet again once we get an understanding of what those dollars are going to be. And for those individuals who think you might need some dollars, and then, again, I think a proper place to start is with DIO, with your councilman, see how we can help move them a little forward to be a blessing for everybody in the city. Okay? And you got anything you want to add to this?
You know, I would just, I think Mr. I think Pedro left.
Yeah, he left.
He left. I do know that he has made a commitment for those that would like to utilize some of their tools that they have. And, you know, we have some other banks that might be able, like BBIF, they may be able to do something for these organizations as well. But I want to just make sure that everyone have their questions answered, and then we will reconvene with the organizations so that we can meet and, you know, find out about these different funding opportunities, because I think that's what's needed more than anything. Mr. Adrian?
Yes, I had a question.
Could you
about...
come up so we can hear you, please, or she can bring you the microphone.
I had a quick question for the DIA in reference to the DIA being opposed to La Villa actually being recognized as a historic district. You know, it's like I'm sitting here thinking and I'm listening to the plans and I'm listening to the recommendations that were made by the DIA, and I really heard nothing community about the plan. It was what we, our, and basically stakeholders that are sitting in the room were kind of like, you know, I didn't see any participation from them, like really understanding what was being proposed for the neighborhood. I've seen logos, I've seen a lot of things that's been done in lieu of planning for La Villa, but it seems to me that a lot of the planning, the stakeholders that really preserved the last of what's left in La Villa, you know, I haven't heard much about seeing that area of La Villa being supported in inclusive legislation the same way the city center and the cathedral district and other areas, you know, structures in those areas, developers in those areas receive, you know, incentives. That I think it's time that we look at La Villa in a different light versus just seeing La Villa as a neighborhood versus a historic district.
So first, if I could just correct, we certainly are not opposed to La Villa becoming a historic district. What I'm saying is that the criteria that
the federal government has for how you get designated a historic district may be a harder hurdle in some areas because of the proximity of buildings to one another. We're not opposed to it. And if that's something that the community wants to pursue as a district rather than on an individual building basis, we certainly can look at that.
I think there's a lot of benefits come that I think we need to take a look at and allow the stakeholders to take a look at, that if we take that path to seeing La Villa being placed as a historic district and being included or become inclusive in the DIA's plans and programs, the way the developers in the city center and the cathedral district, I think that could create an environment that there would be ways that the organizations that are still there and a lot of the infill spaces that you're talking about, a lot of those spaces could be used to enhance the ability of the organizations that preserve some of the last structures left to be able to create what La Villa was instead of, you know, something that a lot of people have planned that really don't have any stake in La Villa. You know, a lot of people that have made plans, a lot of people that have created logos and have created identities for La Villa really don't have the position to do that without community involvement.
And I would just encourage you, I mean, I know you can speak to Cantrice later, but this strategy is something that there was a significant amount of involvement of both community members that own property in La Villa, historical groups that had been involved in La Villa prior to that. I mean, this was not something that was a top-down, somebody else came up with it and
no,
gave
I
it to them.
I participated in 2019 in the original meetings that were held at the Ritz.
Correct. Theater. That's where it was held, yeah.
Yeah, but see, in the manner it was held, it's kind of is a resemblance of how this meeting is held, where y'all are sharing recommendations for a community that, like I said, the history is being disrespected. This community is one of the most prominent communities that African American community produced in the country. It also plays a lot of national ties to the national history in America that we're not using on behalf of the city to leverage it as a tool to create what we say we want to see in downtown and neighborhoods that surround downtown. So I think some things need to be done that would include major stakeholders in La Villa, other stakeholders that live in other parts of the community that may be interested or have backgrounds that would allow them to bring sound ideas that are in line with what's happening in downtown, but there's a true benefit to the community as well as the people that preserve the rest of what's left and others who want to participate in the preservation. There's African American developers around the country that I've brought here on visits to see La Villa. And, you know, there's a lot of support that we could gain from around the country because there's other African American communities that efforts have been spawned to bring them back with a black perspective on the heritage and culture. Not, you know, and I don't want to sound like I'm talking like, you know, condescending, like are being rude, but, you know, we have a lot of whites that are planning history for the African-American culture that, like I said, y'all, there hasn't been the type of participation from stakeholders and natives of the city that I think should start to be addressed and seen different, and let's come up with some ways amongst the stakeholders and some other individuals that may have ideas around seeing La Villa, you know, take shape of what it used to be and what it was, you know, the legacy that was established.
Let me try to help out, and you're probably right, and so I think this might be not too late to the party. We heard your concerns, and if you don't mind, Rashonda, give that to Catrice. I want her to speak because she's been part of this planning for almost 3 years. But to answer your question, whatever we can do, us too, because this is the purpose of why we're having this meeting, to learn from you guys, to see what we got right, what we got wrong, and try to to put our own spin, if you don't mind, into what's going on downtown now. So we hear you. And so from this meeting, this first time I heard that, but we'll figure it out together. You want to go ahead on and talk about the last couple of years of your journey, and because you've been leading this train.
To the front, countries.
Thank you.
Under this mic?
Yeah, just so everybody can see you.
Oh, okay. So, good afternoon, everyone. My name is Cantrice Jones. I am the president and owner of Acuity Design Group. So we work with the Dalton Agency and Ramon Mons on the development strategy. The development strategy was a partnership with DIA and the Jacksonville Transportation Authority. So they were heavily involved with the concerns regarding mobility. We did have three very good stakeholder meetings in 2018. We had quite a bit of attendance. There were over 75 people who attended our meetings. We had a lot of dialogue with multiple people as well. If you guys weren't able to attend those meetings, we certainly are apologizing that if you were not able to attend those meetings. But we asked for feedback from the community in multiple ways. We feel like we received great feedback from the community in order to come up with a plan. Personally, I'm going to step away from the aspect of being a business owner and being a part of the project. I'm just going to say, as an African-American person who had a lot of family growing up here in Jacksonville, LaVilla was a part of that, Clinton Brown was my uncle, it's my mom's brother, I'm just going to say to you guys, there's opportunities in every way, shape, or form if you educate yourself with the information that's needed in order to get what you want. If you aren't able to come to the table ahead of time, before plans, this is a lot of money that was invested in this plan through the DIA and through JTA, and the efforts were colossal efforts that were pulled together. While we may not make everyone happy with every single thing that's done, something is being done. And it's an opportunity now for everyone to step up to the plate in order to say what you want and what you wish for your community. It's not the time to go back and say what was done incorrectly. It is time to say now what we can do correctly. And so you have an opportunity at this point to do that. And so I would encourage you to go to the DIA website or talk to the DIA staff in regards to the grant opportunities or the building opportunities, whatever opportunities you have on your site, your respective sites. Mr. Swanigan, if you do have those developers who are extremely interested in coming into the area, please let me know who those individuals are so we can start to take a look at some of those individuals who are welcome to come and see what can be done in the LaVilla area. It's not just about LaVilla, it's about our community as a whole, and we have to start to pay closer attention to the opportunities that are presented to us. So again, that's off the record, and you know, in spite of what we've done in regards to LaVilla. I think we just need to kind of pay closer attention to what's available to us, utilize those facilities and those opportunities that are available, and not necessarily complain about what isn't being done right. For years, LaVilla sat with no level of development, no level of direction, and then all of a sudden there's this huge level of interest, and that's a wonderful thing. So now we need to take that huge level of interest that's come in and make that be something that we're all going to be proud of. So that's my soapbox in regards to how we should come together and make things work better for the community.
So I would just like to wrap up, if you don't mind. I think, you know, today we're here. We realize that we can't go back and change anything. I think the purpose here is for us, all of us that are in this room, is to be a part of the process going forward, that we be intentional about preserving the African-American history. And we all want to get to the dance at the end of the day. And so I would just say I appreciate you, Lori, coming today. Several of my board members and the friends of Clara White Mission here, same with the Elks and Masonic and Stan. I'm not really sure how many's here.
She's here.
Mamie. But we're here because we care. We're here because we have a heritage here. I grew up in public housing about five blocks away. And so it's really important to me to preserve the history as well. And we also realize that, you know, there are some challenges in LaVilla, and we want to be a part of resolving that. But we got to be able to have the same economic opportunities to bring our facilities up rather than leaving them the way they are. So I want to say I appreciate
You come in, you and your team, you and Mr. Kelly come in today, giving us an update from the strategy of what we knew in 2018. And so we will do a follow-up with you all and be able to decide how the organizations would like to repurpose or continue to do what they're doing. But today has been very educational, even for me, even though I sit on the council, but just being able to hear all of the updates. I don't know if we have any more questions from staff or board members from my side of Clara White Mission. Is everybody good and clear?
Can I make one more suggestion?
Yes. Yes.
My other suggestion is, do you have a LaVilla Board of Directors or some type of community advisory association that you pull together all of the stakeholders that you can meet on a regular basis that have some level of dialogue so you can talk about the issues with parking, with on-street parking, with the buildings?
We've kind of had that, but, you know, I'd like for it to be more official and to be able to have our council member involved with us, and maybe we can look at seeing if there is an opportunity to bring all of the stakeholders so we can all, we're rolling together, you know, at the same time.
I think that would be a great idea in order to help gauge exactly what
it would be great if you can do the second part of that. So that means money has to be found for you to do that, right? Okay.
Absolutely.
So will you find some money?
Let me thank everybody for coming.
Yes. Mm-hmm. State your name, please.
My name is Harold Felder. And I stay in the Hendersonville community, which is near the Heritage Trail. And listening to your plans this evening, I get the impression that this plan is falling short in that it does not appear to be addressing the issue of the communities that are outside of LaVilla but played a very important role in the vibrant scene that was maintained in the LaVilla in the downtown area. I'm speaking in particular to the communities of Durkeyville, Hendersonville, and to a lesser extent, Springfield. Now, I grew up in the Hendersonville community in the late 50s and the 60s. So I have a very good a vision, a remembrance of what was contributing to the vibrancy of downtown. And I saw the demise of the villa in the downtown area, and I'm able to vision what brought that about. What brought it about, for one, was integration, and then a decline in those communities that was contributing to the villa and the downtown area. So I'm wondering, is there some communication with housing and development for those areas immediately around the villa? Because that was a very dense population at one time. And as I stated earlier, that contributed to downtown and the LaVilla. And if you don't focus on those communities now, when you develop all that you're putting or that you were considering in your master plan, you're not going to have anything surrounding LaVilla to come into that area and maintain what you've developed. You've got to have the people. Without that, you're going to have failure. That's my strong opinion. So what does housing and development have to do with what's being laid out here in the master plan? Because I've only heard what you're targeting in that LaVilla area, and it does not venture out into the surrounding areas of the Northwest Quadrant, Northeast, as it relates to this development plan. I would like to hear something in that regard, and I think that's definitely in your district, Mr. Gaffney.
Yes.
All that area surrounding the University Hospital, because for years they talked about what they were going to do with that hospital, and it's come quite a ways from what it was when it was Duval Medical Center, but it has fallen short of what its goals were. And I feel that it has also, because it fell short of its goals, it was detrimental in a continued development of the surrounding areas.
I don't, you want to try, you want me to answer it right quick so we can...
Well, I can answer my specific part,
and
I don't disagree with you that the surrounding areas are very relevant to how successful this ultimately becomes. From our specific part, what you saw was the LaVilla plan within the LaVilla boundaries. Those are the boundaries of our agency's jurisdiction. I can't make a plan beyond those boundaries, which is why what you saw was specifically LaVilla. That is not to say that's exactly why these council members convened the meeting, though, because they represent areas beyond that, and they're looking at it from a bigger perspective, and they're looking at wanting to hear how this fits with everything else they're working on. So,
and I will close with this. And you see Springfield is trying to develop housing. One of the conversations I had with Dr. Haley before God called them home, because he had a vision to develop right around Shands Hospital, Davis Streets, Jefferson Streets, around there. He talked about affordable housing for interns and all kind of things he wanted to do. Shands is still committed, but I think they're at a kind of pause right now because, you know, God called them home about six months ago. We haven't had a meeting since. But I caution everybody, because what makes a community is people is willing to put resources back in it. The city has all kind of entitlement programs to be able to help them, grant programs, but it takes individuals like us who's doing investment to want to invest back in our own community. I often hear this all the time. Everybody going out south side and everywhere else, but we do our best to try to make them invest or make sure they build in our community to the point that all you can do is ask and give incentives, but that's up to them. But one of the things we also find when they decide to come in our community is we don't want it. Sometimes we fight for housing, not development when it comes to stores and that there. But she will tell you the nights or the meetings we have when a new development want to build on the north side of town, and then individuals like yourself and us say we don't want that development, and we talk about. But saying that, we can go back and forth with that. I understand that. I want as much affordable houses as I can on the north side of town. But it takes individuals like you who understand that, because most of the community, sometime when it's happened, they don't want it. Until 5 years ago, they believed that was the best thing ever happened. Thank y'all for coming. Like I say, within the next 30 to 60 days, if God allowed this to happen the way we think it's going to happen, we may be coming back talking about money that we may have for some of these projects that in desperate need to really get y'all moving in the right direction. So, thanks again.
You know, we, Mr. Matoyo, you know, you were here.
Yes.
I know you're from the historical.
You want to say that?
Just tell them a little bit about what your department does.
Oh, sure. Yeah, I'm with the historic. I'm one of the commissioners with the Historic Preservation Group. So I'm one of the volunteers that reviews projects in the three historic districts that are currently designated, whether it's a residential addition or renovation to a historic home or a commercial structure that's also designated as a historic building, or in the case of downtown or in places like LaVilla, a landmark structure would also come under review of the Historic Preservation Commission. And, you know, I just want to tell you, this is the first meeting I've been in for this project, and I just really liked the comments that everyone had, because clearly you believe in this community. There's something at stake here for you, and I think that's important to recognize. The comments about whether LaVilla is just a group of some landmarked buildings, because it does have a lot of what we call missing teeth. In spite of it surviving the fire, there's so many buildings that have just disappeared. It's a shame. So the question of being a historic district or being a collection of landmark buildings, I think that's something for the community to decide. But I think community is the key word. And having a place designated as a historic district, I do think it reinforces and supports the idea of community, because it means there are enough people who believe in saving something that they fight for it and they make it important, so it's recognized. And so I think that I've lived in Jacksonville. Sorry, I got a little bit of a cold. I've lived in Jacksonville my whole life, too, and there's always been something very special about La Villa. And so it's just great to see something happening. There's always been a spirit about the place, and I think that's important.
All right. Thank you. Thank you all. And everybody signed, and we have your email address, right? So we can get a few requests. Thank you.
Also, if anyone parked in the Main Street, Wall Street.